Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 100.
Yeah, we made it.
My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
This is episode 100.
It is episode 100.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. We've been in business for almost 2 years now. It's getting pretty close to that. So that's just wild to me. I can't believe we've made it this far, but I'm so happy. We have a jam-packed episode for you guys today. Lots of things to talk about. And as always, if you'd like to contact us, you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. Getting right into our news and updates this week, got a couple of quick things that I want to talk about, and then something really big that we're going to break down. Sarah Blatting's Guide to Witchcraft and Mayhem is out in the world now. You can go pick it up. I'm still reading it. I was a little slow getting through it because I got distracted by some other things, but it's very good so far, and I think I'm at like the 50% mark, and it is really picking up, and I'm very excited to finish it. There is an excerpt on Reed Riordan. You can read the first chapter on that website. I will link to it there so you can check it out. I also wanted to mention that the second batch of the Son of the Star books from Rainbow Crate, the ones with the alternate cover, went out this week. So if you got your hands on that second run of copies, you should be getting them soon. And you ordered one, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I think it's currently in Iowa.
Okay, so not too far away.
I have a tracking number, and I'm tracking.
Yeah.
Because, I am very excited.
Yeah.
Idaho, not Iowa.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's currently in Idaho, on its way to me.
Yes.
And I am very, very excited to
Should be here in a couple of days, then.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention that Becky gave us a little bit of an update on how the strike is affecting the Red Pyramid adaptation. Because she quote tweeted another tweet and said, "We turned the script for the Red Pyramid into the studio for notes right before the strike started. Besides work being paused, the contract is as well so that the strike doesn't impact the option period," which I thought was really interesting information to have because it would really be terrible if it affected that and then it ran out and they'd have to start all over somewhere else or negotiate a renewal or something like
that.
So that's really good. And then I basically quoted it and said, "Oh, good information to have." And Becky said, "Needless to say, we were hoping to get this project launched sooner, but timelines, especially for this project, are not the same as what we are used to in publishing, even without considering a long strike." And I basically just said, like, you know, for what it's worth, we've been waiting so long for a good adaptation that I don't think anyone really minds waiting, and nobody, you know, anticipated the strike anyway, so everyone that I've seen on Twitter, literally everyone on our timeline, is super supportive of the strike and what the actors and writers are trying to do. So hopefully Rick and Becky and the rest of, you know, the team on that side of things really understands that. And Disney will get on board with, you know.
I was going to say, do you want to do updates on the strike now? Because we do have a few things to report. Someone, I believe it was a Fox executive, said that in order to save the scripted television season this year, they have to get this whole thing settled by the first. This was a studio exec.
Okay.
Who said, October 1st is the deadline if we're going to have any scripted television for the 2023-24 season. Okay. Because it's getting dire now. Like, they're getting to the end point where if they don't start prepping things now, they won't even be able to come back in January with new stuff. Like, they've got to start pre-production. And with that, they have also set a time, I believe, to start negotiating again. Like, they've been negotiating when they're going to negotiate. But the AMPTP...
One of those.
Right. But the AMPTP and the WGA are in talks again to get that settled. I don't know if the Screen Actors Guild is also involved in that, but I know it specifically is WGA.
Okay.
So we are on a possible road to a solution. But it depends on how serious the studios really are. Like, they keep acting like they can go, they'll handle it, they'll go through whatever, they'll wait as long as possible, but they're really starting to feel the push.
Yeah.
And as, like, movies, like, you work on movies so far ahead that, like, movies are coming out this fall, movies will come out next spring, movies will come out probably even next fall without having really been affected that much because you're that far ahead of the release schedule. But then you really start to notice.
Oh, but then, like, there'll be a gap later on.
Yeah. So, like, it's going to affect them. And right now, movies that are going to theaters are still being produced because all the writing part's done. They're all doing post-production,
right,
which is not under, like, guidelines, strike guidelines.
Right.
So, like, obviously those people are still allowed to work. But, like, yeah, you're slowly but surely going to see the studios start to get more and more desperate as they realize that they don't have this, 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 and this to put out for the fall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, we're getting to that crunch time where they're starting to actually feel the push and start to realize how serious these guys are. So.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully
within the next 2 weeks.
I was going to say, hopefully sooner rather than later. Hopefully in the next 2 weeks, we'll at least have them negotiating so that they can get a deal done. But it's baby steps at this point. And, you know, you can never be too sure who is trying to manipulate who by using the media. So, like,
yeah,
did this Fox exec say this so that WGA would come to the table? And then AMPTP is going to be like,
they have a better acronym.
I know. And there, I could see them just being like, well, you've got our deal. Like, that's what we're offering you. And WGA has already said, this is not an acceptable offer. Like, we've already told you no. So, like, the AMPTP has been messing around a lot. Like, they've been playing games with WGA, like, just keeping to the offer they've already got on the table. And they're like, no, we've told you this is not acceptable. So,
yeah,
hopefully.
I saw a tweet the other day from either WGA itself or somebody closely tied to them that was basically like, we've had individual studio heads come up to us and say, we really want to negotiate, but, like, they're kind of getting blocked from doing that by, like, the larger organization, which, if that's true, then that is a good sign. And
yeah,
I think Disney was one of the ones that wants to negotiate, so
I can only imagine, yeah.
Yeah, so I really hope that, yeah, hopefully, you know, October 1st is about 2 weeks away, so hopefully by then we have some serious answers.
And, I mean, there are studios that have reached out, especially, like, independent studios, like A24, that have reached out to the WGA and kind of negotiated their own special deals,
right, yeah,
that have allowed their stuff to go back into production, which is why you'll see some movies in production and it's not, you know, strike breaking and all that. And then you'll also see things like the Drew Barrymore show, which has been all over everyone's timeline. If you haven't heard about it, I would be shocked. You hear stuff about, like, her show where it is a WGA production. It's not a broadcast news production, which means that she is held to the WGA rules and therefore she's in violation and is scabbing. So, like, with that and seeing the public reaction to Drew Barrymore's show coming back and people not being okay with what she's doing, that just helps more and more.
Yeah.
Like, the public is really behind the strike at this point. Like, I know there were some people who, especially at the beginning of these things, always kind of question, like, are they just asking, you know, they're actors, are they just asking for ridiculous things? But it sounds like faster than I think we've noticed before, people really have an understanding of what they're asking for and how it is completely in, you know, it's not ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're literally just asking to make a living wage and to, you know, have the benefits that they deserve, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm really hoping that this was not a manipulation tactic by the studios, but that this Fox exec was literally saying, like, we want our shows to come back. We don't want to have any of, you know, like, let's figure this out.
Right.
It sounded like that, but you just never know.
Yeah. And with, I don't know, New York Comic Con coming up soon, getting this done and over with by October 1st would be really helpful.
It would.
And if it is done and over with, we will do a catch-up episode on all of the news that we are refusing to talk about because we are WGA strong.
That's right.
Okay. So, moving on to the Indonesian cover of Chalice of the Gods. I had to bring this up because this cover is beautiful.
I was going
to
say, did I miss this?
You might have.
I don't think I saw this.
It is so, you'll like it because it's mostly purple. Isn't that just glorious?
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
can't buy any more editions that I can't read.
I didn't think about that though. I mean, I would buy this, and apparently it does match the rest of the set.
Oh, nice.
Because when I translated the tweet, it says the cover art follows the same pattern as Percy Jackson, and it says HDO. I'm assuming that's Heroes of Olympus re-releases in the country. So might have to look into those other sets. I really don't need more copies of those books, but you know, when something's pretty, it's hard to resist.
It's really hard. And I can see all the covers for the both series underneath that.
Oh, really?
Someone posted them.
Okay.
They're gorgeous.
Now I gotta look.
Absolutely gorgeous. Like, I think I like the original five better.
Ooh.
But the Heroes of Olympus are pretty, too. I like the original set a lot.
Well,
trust me, I almost bought a Danish copy of Fourth Wing the other day because it's so pretty. But I'm like, no, Kristen, shipping is $40. Oh. You do not need to spend $40 to have something shipped from Denmark. Like, No, that is not acceptable. So I didn't. But man, these are pretty.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to have to look into them. I can't resist that.
It's hard.
It is very difficult. I also wanted to mention that Jesse Bernstein returns as the narrator for Chalice of the Gods, and he's done the other Percy Jackson books, so people were really hyped about that. I've never actually listened to the audiobooks, but you have.
They're good. Yeah. They're so good. Yeah. And I'm very excited that Jesse Bernstein's back because, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I think it'll give everyone a good nostalgic kick, too, yeah. So that'll be really awesome.
It would have felt weird if there was a new voice.
Yeah.
And so, like, once you get set on a character's voice for an audiobook, like, it's kind of hard to switch. But this, yeah, this is very exciting.
That's really awesome.
Because it's been a while.
Yeah. So, last but certainly not least, we have the chapter titles for Chalice of the Gods. I love this as our last piece of news because if you guys don't want any spoilers, if you don't want to know what the chapter titles are, if you're trying to avoid them, skip right to our discussion section because I want to go through them one at a time fairly quickly, but like some of them I think will have ideas for like what it could possibly mean, and I thought that would be fun to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to mention that there is a preview of the first three chapters of the book on Kobo.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and at first I was like, wait, is this, like, legit? Or is this not, like, supposed to be there? But, like, Kobo is a legit site.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So
very
you can
popular.
Read the first three chapters right now, which is very exciting. Because this book comes out in 2 weeks, and that kind of feels like both a long time and no time at all.
And, I mean, we're... this is a little inside baseball, but Karen and I are used to getting like art copies, but you almost never get them for an actual Rick Riordan book these days. It's kind of rare. Like, we got them for Sun and the Star, but honestly only a couple of weeks before it came out.
Yeah.
So like, I have books right now that come out in 2 months from now.
I have some that come out next year.
Right? Like yeah. Like, you get them ahead of time all the time. But, like, with Rick, with how popular his books are, you either don't get one or you get it very close to release date so that things don't get spoiled and they don't end up posted somewhere. And I 100% understand the security of that.
I actually have an ARC of the Magnus Chase book because that was a new series and so we weren't sure like how it was gonna land and stuff like that, so that one came out early. But like Trials of Apollo, like I got finished copies of them right around release date. Like it was very hard to get that earlier.
Yeah, so it's like we are right there with you in waiting for Chalice of the Gods. Like we have no, there's no special copies or whatever, we have to wait for this. And it's so it's just kind of fun that every so often, you know, Rick puts out a new book and we have to wait like everyone else. And it's like, this is really hard. Thanks
when
so much.
10 years of getting books early makes you a little spoiled. I recognize that we come off that way.
I understand this privilege. Trust me, I 100% get it. Because I get fewer now than I used to.
Yeah.
Just because I haven't been, it's been a minute since I've been reading and reviewing, and so they don't send you as many, which makes sense. Totally understand. But yeah, it starts to, like, you start to question.
Especially a book that you're really anticipating. It's like, I just want it now.
Right now.
Okay, so I'm going to run through most of these pretty quickly, but just shout out if it gives you, if anything comes to mind. So one is I Get Flushed, which immediately makes me think of the bathroom scene in the first books. That was cool. My dad helps out, asterisk, no actual helping occurs.
Hilarious. I'm glad we're going to see Poseidon.
Yeah. Yep.
Makes me happy.
Three, we complain about quests and decorative gourds.
This is giving me fall vibes, and
that's
I like this.
Yep, yep.
In the fall vibes. I'm on board.
Also, that's just a very, like, Percy Jackson rip-off title.
Yeah, yeah.
Four, I take a himbo for smoothies. I wasn't sure who the himbo could be.
I have a feeling this is a new himbo.
It might be Ganymede, actually.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. Yeah, because I feel like it's either a new himbo or it's one we don't know very well. Because, like, my first instinct was to go Apollo.
My first instinct was Hercules, but I can't remember if he was actually a himbo. Because he was kind of a jerk, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Like yeah, like a little bit. Yeah, which is why my brain went to Apollo, apparently. Yeah. And I was like, no, they wouldn't describe this as Apollo as a himbo in the title.
Yeah.
Like, it would be something else. So, yeah, but I am intrigued as to who this himbo is.
I do kind of feel like it's Ganymede.
I mean, it would make sense.
Yeah. Five, everybody hates Ganymede because he's so pretty.
I mean, that leads us to believe.
Yeah. Six, because licorice.
I do like licorice.
I do not like licorice.
I like strawberry licorice.
I could get behind that. The black licorice, though?
No.
Blah.
I should give you some of the good Trader Joe's strawberry licorice.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Seven, big shocker, I offend a goddess.
I love the big shocker.
I know.
At the beginning of that.
I kind of feel like this is Iris because we read recently about, like, I think he does offend Iris and then she sends him out on a quest.
Yeah.
Eight, I want my mommy.
I mean, I don't know if Sally's actually going to make an appearance, but I love that he still is like, listen.
Yeah.
I need Sally.
I feel like she's got to at least show up in the beginning and or the end.
And yeah. I would like to see
her. We need some
at
home
least
life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Nine, the chickens draw first blood. And remember, there are chickens and snakes on the front of the car.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I was trying to think again whose animal is the chicken, like whose sacred animal, but I don't remember.
Didn't we talk about, like, Aries or something?
Yeah, because it was weird.
And there were, like, a few that had, like, chickens, roosters. Yeah.
Yeah.
10, my singing makes things worse and everyone is totally shocked.
Hear the sarcasm.
Yes.
Ringing out of Rick's voice right at us right there.
11, we win zero prize tickets. I don't really know what this means.
Does this mean they didn't win any prize tickets, or is zero prize?
Oh,
like
we win some zero prize tickets.
Yeah,
or we win zero prize tickets.
Right, like which is it? I think it's probably
the second way first.
Okay, I was gonna say I think it's probably like we don't win any prize tickets.
That makes more sense.
But I could see the ambivalence there, and with Rick, you can never be sure of his titles. He always. He likes to do a little bit of weird wordplay sometimes, so it could be something like that.
Yeah. 12, Ganymede gets me a refill. He is the cupbearer of the gods.
Which
so.
You won't be able to do at McDonald's in a couple of weeks. They're taking
they're
taking away the drink stations, and you have to go up to the counter and ask for a refill.
Really? That's shocking. And I'm surprised they didn't do that during COVID.
Now I want to say it's a service-related thing. Who knows?
Interesting.
But yeah, I just noticed that the other day.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's at least Ganymede's willing to get rid of it.
Right. 13, we look for dead stuff at the farmer's market.
You know, a farmer's market is the perfect place for a Percy Jackson fiasco to take
place.
Like, there's always chaos at a farmer's market, so I'm honestly very excited about
this. I can't help but be like, will mushrooms be involved?
Right?
Because I would love that.
It could.
14, Iris gives me a stick.
Very
and,
awesome.
I mean, that's the staff. Hermes' staff is on the front of the book, too. So I wonder, because Iris and Hermes are, like, fairly close. They're both messenger gods. Could that be related somehow?
Very true. Very possible.
15, Yonkers, with an exclamation point.
Which is a city in New York, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is exciting. Sure.
16, Grover busts out the snake songs.
We're getting some reed pipes.
Yeah.
I love it.
Anaconda.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would be so
that's
funny.
That's probably going to be a thing. Oh. Oh, that's going to be amazing. Or, like, something by Whitesnake. Like, I'm trying to think of snake-related songs.
Yeah.
Like, look what you made me do.
She's gonna start busting out Taylor Swift.
That would be great, yeah. 17, I meet the man bun of doom. I don't know who that could be, but I'm very interested.
Yeah.
I like man buns.
Why do I think it's a bad guy? Like, the man bun of doom, I feel like this is gonna be a very, very bad guy, so I don't think you're gonna like his man bun here. You're not allowed to like his man bun.
Fine. 18, Annabeth conquers all with herbal tea.
I mean,
interesting. And there's a thing about tea later on in the discussion that this will kind of come back to.
Hmm.
19, I taste the rainbow and it's pretty nasty.
So that's definitely Irish related.
It's gotta be, yeah. I wonder why it tastes so bad. 20, Iris takes Venmo. It's good to know. It's very convenient.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Of her to step into the future.
Oh, right, because he might not have a drachma, so maybe he can Venmo her a drachma for a message. But they're not supposed to have, like, technology and stuff, right? Or maybe he's old enough now that it's not as big of a deal.
I'm also curious if, like, New Rome maybe has put in safeguards to, like, allow them to use technology and it won't alert monsters. Like, I'm curious.
They would still be in New York City, I think. I mean, they could travel.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. I'm hoping that, like, because I feel like these kids these days and technology, like, it's not...
When
Rick first started reading these books, technology was useful, but not, like, it wasn't, like, necessary for everything. Whereas these days, like, cell phones are a lot. Like, it's hard to function without a cell phone these days.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little bit curious if maybe this is, like, Rick trying to, like, morph a little bit of technology into their world. Like, maybe just a little.
And Percy might be powerful enough that it's not a big deal anymore.
Definitely possible.
Yeah. 21, I offer relationship advice? No, seriously. Why are you laughing? I wonder if that's with Ganymede or something.
It could be.
Or it could be somebody else entirely.
Yeah.
22, I get a cupcake and a surprise. Surprises in Percy Jackson are usually not a good thing.
I was gonna say maybe this is where his mom shows up with the cupcake.
Oh,
and
maybe
it's blue and it makes us all cry because we love Sally Jackson so much.
23, Ganymede explodes all the beverages.
Pretty self-explanatory there.
Pretty much. 24, I brush my teeth in the most heroic way possible. Not sure what that has to do with
that,
but
I've got nothing. And that's interesting.
This one, 25, I meet the goblet ganker. Now, I had to look up the word ganker because I didn't know what it meant. And as far as I can tell, it is not a real word.
Okay.
It is a slang term within the online gaming sphere.
Mm-hmm.
One who ganks in gameplay, which, like, that doesn't really help me very much.
Thanks so much.
To swindle, to steal. So, okay, so this is the chapter where we find out who stole the goblet.
That is
okay.
Some excellent detective work.
Thank you.
Because I would not have thought ganker could mean thief.
Yeah.
That would not have been my first guess.
I like the alliteration there.
Yeah.
I feel like, And, I mean, Rick is, like, into, like, video games and, you know, D&D and, like, all those kind of things. And pretty sure anime, too, because Becky's really into anime and everything. So, like, they get it.
Yep.
They have that down. 26. I negotiate the terms of my disintegration. I have more information on this later, too. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is concerning, so,
27. My dying words are super embarrassing. 28, it starts raining toys. That'd be kind of fun, but also painful, depending on the toy.
Right,
29, I teeter on the precipice of Mount Brunch.
I want to visit Mount Brunch.
Right.
As my stomach growls. If you guys hear it, I'm apologizing now, because I didn't eat before I came over here, and it made some noise a minute ago. I was like, okay, but Mount Brunch sounds fantastic.
It does. 30, I infiltrate the lair of Lightning God 3000.
I mean, did Zeus get an upgrade?
Yeah, like, could this be Zeus? Could this be somebody else?
Is he, like, rebranding? And now he's not Zeus because Zeus is the old Greek god that people picture as an old man. And Zeus is like, I'm not old. I'm Lightning God 3000. Like, I could totally see him doing that.
For some reason, it also made me think of Thor. But, like, I don't see why Thor would be a part of this, you know?
Yeah.
But because Thor was, like, kind of douchey in the Magnus Chase book, so I could see him going by Lightning God 3000. But, yeah, I don't think that he's going to be involved.
Why did they pick 3000?
I don't know. Makes me think of Tony Stark.
It was making me think of Tony Stark, too, and I'm like,
And maybe it's not Zeus. Maybe it's, like, a lower-level lightning god. I don't know if we know any others.
Well, you know Zeus uses lightning bolts, but he's not actually, like, the god of lightning, necessarily.
Yeah.
There may be a minor god of lightning
that like could be involved more specific. Here. Yeah. 31, I face a dangerous predator who is possibly my future mother-in-law. Oh, my gosh.
I do like the talk of future mother-in-law.
Yes. So
this is pro-Persebeth. This is a pro-Persebeth book, and I'm stating it right now because I'm reading it, and it says future mother-in-law.
Yep.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. And obviously that's Athena, so that's pretty interesting. Why is Athena getting involved in this?
Yeah, really.
We'll have to see. 32, Grover eats my leftovers. Love a mention of Grover.
Par for the course.
Yep.
Grover's usually eating leftovers. Yep. We're good with that.
33, one more Jolly Rancher for old time's sake. This sounds vaguely ominous.
Yes. And also it's making me think really hard, and it hurts, about whether there have been Jolly Ranchers in the past. Like, I was trying to think of where in the Percy Jackson books we've had a Jolly Rancher before. Unless it's, like, a Jolly Rancher. Wasn't Ganymede running the ranch?
Yes, he was. That would be really funny. With a quick Google search, I'm not seeing anything about Jolly Ranchers. Okay. So we'll just have to see.
If anyone remembers a throwaway line or something that they're better than us and can remember that, please let us know. But nothing's coming to mind.
It could be a reference to the beginning of the book, because I just found an excerpt from penguin.com.au, so the Australian branch, and it has an excerpt from the book on here, and there is something about Jolly Ranchers.
So maybe this is like a Chalice of the Gods book reference, like the beginning of the book they have Jolly Ranchers and it's one of their new favorite things or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, that could be. I could see that.
Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. 34, I write the worst letter ever. Delete, delete. I assume that's like trying to get into New Rome University.
Probably.
Yeah. That's funny. 35, pretty much the best goodnight kiss ever. Oh my god.
Oh my god. I love it.
Yeah. Obviously, that is a throwback to pretty much the best underwater kiss of all time. So,
yeah.
And we also apparently have some bonus material at the end of the book. So,
mystery.
I know. I wonder what that could be.
Rick just loves trolling us. It's here's all the chapter
titles.
But then there's bonus.
Did you actually see the video where he showed this?
No.
He literally, like, he's like, look here. He had all five books from the original series with the Victo and I covers, and then he had Chalice of the Gods on top, and he's like, let's open it up, and he opens it up, and it's like bright blue on the inside, and he's like, oh, it's so pretty, and he goes, here's the title page, and he opens it up, and he's like, the dedication is still to Walker, Leah, and Arian, and then he goes, are you guys ready for the chapters? And he like opens it and closes it like that fast, and he's like, hope you caught that. I'm like, Rick, obviously everybody's going to pause that video and take a screenshot, which is exactly what they did.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's delightful and also the worst.
Yeah, he loves trolling us.
He has such fun with it, and I love that he knows that we're going to have a lot of fun, too.
So those were all the chapter titles for Chalice of the Gods. I feel like it gave us, like, some very minor clues as to some stuff and also told us nothing at all, which is, like, the best way to name your chapters because you don't want them to actually give anything away. But they're all fun and they're all just, you know, perfect Rick Riordan chapter titles.
It's always those, you know, like, you forget about the chapter titles, but then you, like, read the chapter and then you remember the title and you're like, oh, he was totally referring to that. Like, that's kind of hilarious. Like, it happens all the time with his chapter titles. But yeah, reading them now, we can make guesses like we did. But, like, I have no idea what any of this means. Except for the best goodnight kiss ever, because that has to be an actual goodnight kiss. And that makes me very happy.
Yeah, I love it. So excited.
Something to look forward to, especially since halfway through the book, we're talking about death.
Yeah. We know that all three of them survived, though, because they're all three in Trials of Apollo.
Right. So this is, you know, positive affirmations. They're all good. So.
We will be talking about where we left all of the characters in Heroes of Olympus prior to when Chalice of the Gods takes place in a moment. But first, we're getting to part one of this week's discussion because we're doing two parts. And it is celebrating our 100 episodes. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This is just so exciting. And I considered doing a live episode for this, but to be perfectly honest, that felt like a lot more work. And I'm trying very hard these days to not work so hard.
I was going to say, you're trying to enjoy and really enjoy your fandom stuff. Since you're writing and you're writing books, has taken up your professional workspace.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep the fandom stuff fun, which is important. And I feel like if you do too many lives, it can kind of dampen the excitement for them. So maybe somewhere down the line, I don't know, maybe like once the strike is done and there's some show stuff, maybe we'll decide to go live for something.
Live watch party?
Like, that would be really fun. Or maybe 150 episodes or 200 episodes, like there's definitely opportunities for us to do live episodes in the future, but it just wasn't necessary this time.
That's true. But we do have a lot of really fun things to talk about because I really just wanted to kind of go back into our array of episodes and remember all of the awesome things that we did. So I know that it's very hard to pick, and we definitely both picked more than one, but do you have any favorite episodes or discussions from the past, I guess, 99 episodes?
Yes. And I mean, we kind of did a little bit of this at 50. Like, we didn't go deep into it. So most of my stuff is from between 50 and 100, because I feel like those are the ones we haven't talked about at all yet. But one that I really, as I was scrolling back through all of our docs, I remember episode 71, which was Deep Dark Onion Layers, where we discussed Persebeth, and we, like, did a whole Persebeth episode. And I just really remember loving the discussion of them as a couple and, like, kind of just taking a minute to look at them as a couple in the series and what that means in the first five books and, like, all of that. But we also read Staff of Hermes, and it was kind of the first time either of us had read this, and it fit perfectly with our Persebeth discussion, and it was like, oh my gosh, we couldn't have planned this better than we did. Like, it just was kismet, and everything worked out so well, and I remember really loving that episode.
Yeah. I love that, too. I love when things work out like that on accident. It's hilarious. Also, going back through all of the episodes, I realized, like, not to toot my own horn, how funny some of our titles are.
I'm pretty proud of them.
Yeah, Deep Dark Onion Layers is pretty great, and there are some other ones where I'm just like, this was just a genius title. I could see it being, like, a chapter title for one of the books or something like that. It's just, it made me really happy.
Definitely. And, I mean, there's so many episodes that I really love and would love to bring up, but I also wanted to mention the What If episodes, because I always, spoiler alert for me and my feelings, I always kind of dread them a little bit, because my brain doesn't work like that. My brain, like, thinks about what has happened in the book, and keeping track of the events of the book, like, that is usually way more than I can think, dream of. But when we started doing the What Ifs, like, it's so much fun to think about, if this one little thing was different, what else could change. And I'm terrible at doing them myself. Mm-hmm. But once we, like, start talking about them, I get really into talking about this new world and all the possibilities for different storylines and which characters could have maybe had a different fate or something better could have happened, or maybe they step in and they're the main character. Like, I just really love digging deep into that. It's one of the things I miss the most about school is, like, I love, like, bringing down Hamlet in my senior year of high school. Like, I absolutely love looking at line by line, chapter by chapter, talking about each part of the thing. And, like, once you're out of school, you don't really get a chance to do that with people as often, unless you're in a book club or something, and I don't have a book club. So, like, this is really a fun way to do that but in a with a twist, because mm-hmm. you're doing it in alternate universes and you're yeah. messing with reality and you're changing the story. And yeah, so I really, really love them because it's not something I really thought I would love, but I've really enjoyed doing mm-hmm. them.
It's a really fun creative exercise. It helps us remember what happened previously in the book and also kind of helps us, like, you're right, think about things from a different perspective, like how much even just one little thing could have changed the entire future of the series and, you know, all of the characters and stuff like that. And it is cool to just think, okay, Rick went in this direction, but, you know, he could have gone in three other directions and how the series would have changed because of that. And turns out most of his decisions, I think, are probably the best case scenarios anyway.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we shouldn't be surprised by.
Even when it means that a character has to die or
yeah.
go through something terrible or whatever, it usually ends up being a very satisfying way to tell a story.
Yeah. Mine is probably episode 57, Junk Drawer God, because Hermes is definitely one of the more interesting gods, and we learned so much. That was another episode that was like everything fell into place at the right time. That was really strange. I love the title of that one, Junk Drawer God. I think that's so funny.
That was definitely on my list. I was
yeah.
considering that one.
Yeah, and it's just, I think that was one of our best discussions, most interesting discussions about a god, and I like when we do the monster guides and the deep dives and all of that. Like, we don't always have time to do them, or they're not always super relevant, but I definitely enjoy them a lot, and I'm hoping, you know, we could probably get back to that if it becomes relevant for Chalice of the Gods discussion, and then of course when we get back into Red Pyramid.
I mean, we definitely haven't looked at Iris really
yeah.
as a deep dive, so like that's a possibility for a discussion, as well as like Ganymede.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
We talked about Ganymede, especially with Sun and the Star and stuff, but like there's definitely a lot more to the history of that character.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, there's a lot we could talk about with the gods coming
yeah,
up.
Yeah, definitely. That should be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
All of our merch and video game and board game discussions always stick out to me because honestly, like, I genuinely think we have some really good ideas, and if Disney wanted to pay us to help put that into action, I would be more than happy to do it.
I mean, yeah, I'll be an idea man.
Yeah.
You and me, Disney.
Episode 64 was our 2023 look ahead, and it was really interesting going back through the show notes for that episode and seeing our guesses for what we might see this year, what we were planning on reading this year. Nobody anticipated the strike, obviously, so that threw us a big curveball. But
yeah.
we were wondering, like, oh, will we get a trailer this year? And we did end up getting one, and all of the books that were coming out, like The Last Gifted Clans and Sarawak and all of them, like, we've read so many of them now, and so it's just really cool to, like, look back on that and just see how far we've come.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to also shout out episode 83 for the interview with Rick and Mark, because,
I mean,
that was definitely a highlight of the podcast.
I can understand why that would be your one of your highlights, because,
yeah,
yeah, that's really exciting, and it was fun. Honestly, it was fun from my perspective, too, because I didn't get to go to the tour stop and, like, hear all the fun and the crazy that went on, because
yeah.
it's a Rick Riordan event, so it's, you know, something crazy.
And
about
Mark's there, so,
right.
you know.
So, like, yeah, it was really fun to go kind of through the day, step by step, and see all the fun things that went on. So.
Yeah. Now, on this podcast, we learn a lot of information about mythology and a bunch of other random things, history and civilization and all of that. Was there any, like, fun fact or any information that really stuck out to you that you still remember now?
I mean, the most, like, recent, and maybe it's recency bias in my head, the one of the things that kind of jumps out at me is Glenn Turman.
Yeah.
Like, looking at his whole career and where he started on the stage alongside Sidney Poitier, like, all the way to where he is now with the kids, and, like, him kind of getting to be that for them a little bit is, like, it's just very exciting to learn all about this actor who, I mean, I love TV and movies. I'm constantly, like, learning new actors' names, even new actors, like, actors that have been around forever that I just haven't seen in things
right.
or whatever. And Glenn just kind of is one of those for me. I think I had seen him in things, but had never really, like, known his name. I didn't really know to look for him. But now, like, looking back, it's like, oh my gosh, he's had such a really, like, great, awesome career, and he's worked with all these amazing people and these really cool projects. And I was really glad we got a chance to look at his career through the documentary and, like, just talk about it a bit. I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, that one was episode 89, and I remember really liking learning about the history of film and theater, and especially Black history of film and theater. Yeah. I'm still really interested in, like, learning more about that, so... Yeah, that was really cool. My fun fact was Chiron has two human legs.
Yeah, that really was
that incredibly... That one's never gonna go away. That one's just it burned into disturbing. My brain.
Yeah, yeah. We're all a little freaked out.
Yeah. That was episode 62. What about favorite guest stars / authors that we've had on?
I mean, it's hard because I love them all.
I know, it is difficult.
Basically just want to say, like, everyone. But I really loved talking with Roseanne. We really loved Serwa. It was such a fun book. And talking to Roseanne was, like, even better because she...
One of us.
She is one of us. Yeah, like, she's one of us. She's part of our generation of fandom that is more interactive because we've had the internet the whole time, pretty much, you know, for a lot of these fandoms from their birth. We've been able to talk in chat rooms, if it was chat rooms way back when, or, you know, like...
Forums.
Yeah, or communicate with the artists on Twitter and whatnot. So, like, yeah, I feel like she just really gets it. You know, so many of the RRP authors get it. But, like, she stands out in my mind because we had such a great discussion with her. And I know we want to have her back on the podcast sometime in the near future. Because we just had so much fun. Like, even if it's not for one of her books, just to, like, have her on to talk about Percy stuff and whatever.
Yeah.
Because she's just such a lovely human. And I really loved our chat with her.
Yeah, so did I. And I was really happy to see that her in-person book event went really well. And the Maryland stop for Chalice of the Gods is sold out now.
Yeah.
So that's Maryland, Maine? I think it might be
Maine.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just really exciting, and I'm super, super happy for her. I have to say that for me, and I've talked about this to death, so I don't think this is going to be a surprise to anybody, but episodes 33 and 87, when we talked to Daniel Jose Older, his interviews just really stand out to me because they've honestly affected me so personally as a writer. I remember things that he said that when I'm writing kind of, like, encouraged me to keep going and to kind of feel like, okay, I'm on the right path with this. And that just is so important to me. And I think that he is such a great storyteller. I'm so excited to see him in Chicago. It's going to be really great. But also, I had to shout out episode 36 for Gracie Kim because I love her so much. And the books are so wonderful. And she's like Roseanne in my mind. Like, she's kind of just one of us. She's like somebody who just gets excited about things. And I love the way that she tells stories.
And the food.
Yeah, and the food.
All the food. We love talking about food.
Yeah, can't forget about the food. So I guess that kind of rolls into the next question, which was your favorite Rick Riordan Presents book discussion?
Again, we've had some really, really, I feel like our most intense discussions of, like, themes and whatnot always come from RRP books.
Like, philosophy and stuff. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm sure if we took an episode to talk about a Rick Riordan book, we'd probably get to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
But we break down Rick's books by chapter so much that you don't necessarily get as much time to talk about, like, the big themes as much as we do with the RRP books. And it always ends up going to a place. I feel like we leave our RRP book discussions with, like, soul happiness.
Yeah, really.
Like, I always feel like we've hit a place, and I feel like really smart. Like, I walk out of the room being like, that was a really good discussion, and I feel like all of my, like, intellectual synapses were firing because we were talking about the experience of grief in Spirit Song and with some of Gracie Kim's books too, and, like, really delving deep into how these characters experience grief and all this stuff. Like, these are huge concepts that it's just so fun to dive into these stories and talk about them. So I think all of them, honestly, are some of our best discussions.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it might be recency bias. I have a problem with remembering way far back.
Yeah.
But I really loved our Fury of the Dragon Goddess discussion. It was such a good book, and it took these characters to a new, like, City of the Plague God was a great story, and I absolutely loved these characters and what happened in that book. But with all of the stuff with Sick and his brother and dealing with that reality, and like all that hit so hard with my own siblings, and like really just opened my eyes to things and like made me more grateful for them, which is hard because sometimes I just want to punt them. And not like the English punting with a boat, which I know we talked about in an episode.
Did we?
Where punting is like with a stick where you like...
Oh.
It's an actual like thing, but punting...
I don't remember that.
I mean like football punting them across the room. But yeah, I just... I really, really loved that discussion. It's one of our most recent, but it's just so much fun. Besides Spirit Song, or Spirit Books.
Glass.
God. So many things that the spirits are inhabiting in my head today. Yeah, I mean, other than Spirit Glass, it's kind of very recent, but yeah, I really loved it.
Yeah, I think I actually have to agree with you on this one, because I went back through and, like, it was weird because Tiger Honor also really stuck out to me for some reason. I think it's because that was our first Work Around and Presents discussion, and it was just, that book is just so, like, vibrant in my mind. And there are so many other ones. I mean, obviously, I love, you know, Aru Shah, and I love Gracie Kim's books and Sarwa and all of that. But there is something really special about Sarwat's books, I think partially because of the interview and partially because they're just darn good books.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'm going to kind of go with City of the Plague God, which was episode 93, because, again, I feel like we got really deep with that one, and it really went to a place where, you're right, whenever we talk about them, I kind of walk away like feeling like a better person who's thought deeply about my own life and the life of other people who are different from me, and like these different cultures and life experiences. And it's just, I got goosebumps, but I know that, you know, these are just silly little books for middle schoolers and stuff, but it's really no joke that they open the door into a whole new world in ways that me, as an almost 35-year-old person, you know, I could go out and find somewhere else, obviously, but, like, it's just so easy to step into these worlds with these amazing authors and learn new stuff, and then that always makes me interested in going out and learning more beyond that, which is exactly what these books are meant to do. And yes, they are geared toward children, but obviously we are perfect examples of how adults can still enjoy them and go out and want to do that too.
Heck yeah. I mean, it's kind of like touching on that high of reading a really good book for the first time, and you're like, by the time you're done reading it, you're like, I don't want to leave the world. Like, I love everything that just happened, and I'm invested, and why does it have to be over? Like, this is not fair. The discussions we have kind of take me to that same place. Like, we're so into the moment and we're talking about it, and it just, yeah, it makes my heart really, really happy to, like, really look deep at this silly little middle grade book about a boy who, you know, accidentally disturbs a plague god, and, you know, like, all the, like, that sort of thing. Like, it's supposed to be so fun and lighthearted, and it can be, but, like, there's just so many layers to those stories, and Rick Riordan has done a great job of curating the RRP books to all be authors who have, like, something to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, we want to write, you know, books about mythology and adventures, blah, 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 that's what this imprint is. Like, no, these books kind of reach to something else, too. I mean, a lot of literature does, but there's plenty of books out there that are adventure tales and don't necessarily have commentary on grief and acceptance and all the things that we've come across in RRP books. So
they're
definitely some of our better discussions.
Yeah, and I think that it really adds something to the podcast because, you know, I understand, and I don't know exactly how many of our listeners listen to our discussions having read the books, listen to them having not read the books, or skip them altogether. But I will never regret talking about them on the podcast because I think they really add a new dimension to what to our discussions like we were talking about. And I think that anybody who enjoyed Percy Jackson will enjoy the Rick Riordan Presents books. And for us, we've talked about this before, it's really important for us to kind of uplift those voices too and do what we can to kind of help spread the word about diverse voices and diverse books and characters. So I feel like we're putting some good out into the world when we discuss Rick Riordan Presents. So what were some of the most surprising moments that you experienced while recording the podcast?
The first thing that popped in my head was Callie's feeder, which I think Karen edits out of the episodes so you guys don't hear it. But Karen used to have an automatic feeder for Callie in her office here, and it would go off every day at noon. And we usually record sometime around, like, between 10 and 11, sometimes a little later, but, like, a lot of times we'll be recording at noon, and the feeder would go off, and I wouldn't know that it was noon, and so I would get startled by this noise to my left, and it's like, bah! And it happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like, Karen has since moved the feeder out of her office, so we won't be having those scares any longer. But, man, it's always funny when it happens. You guys just don't know it. It's one of those...
It makes me jump.
Yeah. Like, it's not loud or anything, but it's just all the little pieces of dry food coming down the feeder. It's like...
And especially when you're, like, in the middle of discussion, you're, like, in the zone, and then all of a sudden this noise happens.
Like, oh my god, it's too much. I can't handle this. But wasn't... I can't remember. I scrolled back through episodes. There was an episode where something happened live while we were discussing the book. I want to say it involved Becky, and it was something, like, show-related. I don't think it was, like, the casting, because I think we had a day or two in between that. But it was something like that. So maybe it was the teaser trailer, or I don't know. There was something that happened live.
I think I remember that, too. But I don't know what it is.
I scrolled through all of our docs. I tried to figure out what episode it was in or what it was. Could not remember. But I just love that, we're always ready to kind of roll with the punches. And if something happens while we're recording that really affects either Rick or his writing or whatever, we're going to take a minute and we'll talk about it. Because, or we'll address it in the next episode if it really should probably wait. Because we can occasionally use self-control and wait to talk about fun things. It's just not a ton of surprising things off the top of my head. But, there's so many things that do surprise me that come up in conversation just as we're talking. It's like, wait, what?
So technically this isn't while we were recording, but I think two of the biggest surprises for me, other than Chiron's human legs, which will never leave my brain, finding out Jemiah was going to be on Survivor, that was really shocking.
That was, like, so exciting.
Yeah, you sent me that article and I was like, what? And so it's just, that was so awesome. And then obviously this is, like, super sad and I almost didn't want to write this down, but finding out that Lance Reddick died was really shocking, and I had a lot of trouble concentrating that day just knowing that, like, we would see him in the show, but, they'd have to change something afterwards, and just, somebody who looked fairly healthy on the outside and everything, that was just, like, it was just really surprising. And we ended up doing a little bit of a deep dive on his career in episode 76, if you want to go back and revisit that.
Yeah, I that definitely would fit the bill, I think, for surprise. Because while, we just really loved the idea of Lance as Zeus. And we, when we were doing our fan cast, wasn't he one of the ones who came up in our discussion?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, like, he was one of the ones we actually kind of got right, because he was just so, he could so easily embody that character.
I think I cast him as Charon.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought his, like, very skeletal face would have been really perfect.
Oh, yeah. And so it is absolutely tragic that he won't get to be Zeus, like, for many, many seasons. But
right.
I do feel blessed that we will get to see him as Zeus when the show does finally premiere for us. So, like, we'll at least get to see him as the character. In the future, they'll probably have to, recast or whatever, but... at least we will get to see him as Zeus, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what about things that we are looking forward to the most going, you know, forward into the future? Obviously, Chalice of the Gods, I think, is, like, right at the top of the list.
Especially for me, now with the new cast.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about how, like, I don't necessarily picture people, but once I have, like, a character's look in my brain, like, it kind of sticks after that. Like, I have trouble imagining it without having seen it. But now that we've, like, seen them in costume, we've seen the trailer, we've seen things, I am very excited to, like, read Chalice of the Gods with Walker, Leah, and Arian in my head. So, like, that's very exciting to
me. I think that's awesome. Those chapter titles got me hyped. Like, I am more excited than ever, and the book is right around the corner, so that's just all very, very exciting.
Eek. Yeah, I agree.
Obviously, we are excited about the show, too, although we can't talk about it right now, but hopefully in a couple of weeks, we will be able to discuss everything that we haven't so far.
Right? It's really, like, disappointing that we can't, because, as we said before, like, we started the podcast because we saw the adaptation was coming, and we were so excited to, like, be able to get there. So it is really disappointing that this strike is keeping us from doing that. We're just as sad that we haven't discussed it as you guys, but it's a small price to pay for people being able to actually afford to work in jobs they love and get paid a living wage, not even extravagant, but just be able to get by and make bills and things like that. So we will continue to sacrifice this thing, but it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
It'll work out.
Eventually we'll get it all caught up.
Yes. And, of course, I think finishing the Red Pyramid is also something that we're really looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, as much as, you know, Rick has written things other than Percy. We loved Daughter of the Deep when we did that discussion. And, you know, I've read Magnus Chase, and even Trials of Apollo is, like, slightly different because it's not a Percy book. But I wasn't sure at first if I was going to like these characters and this story. Like, I wasn't sold. I have always wanted to read them because I want to have read all of Rick's books. And the Kane Chronicles was one of those weird blank spots where I really just hadn't taken the time to get into them. And I am loving them so much. Like, I'm really, really enjoying Carter and Sadie as siblings. And I do not know what is wrong with me and why I put it off for so long. Like, it's kind of fun to have me as kind of the newbie, even though Karen doesn't remember a ton of stuff. But, like, it's kind of nice to have that dynamic, too. So it works, and I'm glad that it worked out so well. But I am really excited to finish Red Pyramid in, you know, next year, because the story has been really good so far, and we're just getting to that point where things are going to start really racing forward, and you can kind of feel that looming just outside of our reach at the moment, and I'm looking forward to that when we get back to it. So
yeah, definitely. I'm really glad that we're revisiting it at a slower pace than I read it before, because these ones, like, I love Magnus Chase. That was never hard for me to get into. Red Pyramid and the Kane Chronicles, like, I liked them, but I never even finished the third book. I just kind of forgot about it, and that was always my secret shame as a Percy Jackson fan. And so I think this is both doing us both a favor by going through it chapter by chapter and really kind of getting into it. So yeah, I'm very excited to finish it up, very excited to get into the rest of the books, and finally read The Serpent's Shadow, and also that Netflix movie.
Like, I was going to say, it kind of worked out timing-wise, that as we decided to start the podcast, we've got all these adaptations coming, not just the Percy show, but the first Red Pyramid movie and, like, all that. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to all things Kane Chronicles in the near future.
Yeah. And, of course, we can't forget upcoming Rick Riordan Presents books. Are there any that you're like, I cannot wait to pick this one up?
I mean, yes. Honestly, one of the ones that you wrote down is one that I thought about, even though it's, like, scary. So I'm going to let you talk about it, because I know you're much more excited about that than even I am. But it does, like, look really cool, so I am intrigued about that. But for me, Winston Chu versus the Wingmeisters, I loved that first Winston Chu book.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit sad that it's only going to be a duology, like, that we're only getting two books. But I really loved that story and the world and Winston and all of that. So I'm very much looking forward to getting into the sequel next February when it comes out.
Yeah. That's not that far away.
It's not.
It's coming soon.
It's like less than six months. Yeah. It's somewhere in the 6 month range.
2024 is close. It's
racing toward us.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to A Drop of Venom by Sajni Patel, which comes out January 16th, 2024. That one, as soon as it was announced, I was immediately kind of taken by it. I believe this is one of the YA adaptations, and it's about Medusa, and it's just like a interesting twist on that myth, and it seems like it's going to be kind of intense, but I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what she does with that story. And then the other one, which is the one you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Is It Waits in the Forest by Sarah Das, which comes out May 14th, 2024. And that one's going to be a horror novel, basically.
Yeah, okay. I don't don't like scary things.
I don't.
I really don't. But then sometimes I do.
Yeah.
And for some reason, my brain is like, it's an RRP horror novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be able to handle this.
I don't
like,
think
it's going to be fun.
Too scary.
Yeah. And I think that's probably going to be my sweet spot. It's like, I need, like, middle grade horror.
Yeah.
That is where I can be scared, but not scared.
Right.
And I think that, yeah. It's like thrillers. Like, I like thriller movies, but I don't like horror movies.
Right.
There's a line.
Yeah.
I don't mind tension and being a little scared of what's going to happen and all that. Like, even a slasher movie, I don't mind so much. But I just can't do, like, psychological horror-y kinds of things. And so, yeah, I think middle grade horror is maybe right where I need to be.
Yeah. So if you have any recommendations for middle grade horror, I would read them too, honestly, because I am trying to get more into horror and... Well, books are a lot less scary than movies, to me at least. I think that I would still appreciate some lighter horror reads.
I was going to say, I remember you reading, what is it? There's Someone in the House.
Somebody's Inside Your House or something like that. Yeah, Stephanie Perkins.
Yeah. I remember you reading that in the apartment and you like walking out of your room like, I can't be in there by myself. I can't do it. I can't be in there by myself right now. I need to be amongst people. So I'm just going to take a break. Because, like, I remember you reading that book and just being, like, overwhelmed by the scary. And, yeah. So, I mean, this coming from me, who, when we read that one Dawn Kurtigich book for Book Hype way back in the day, I could not, like, I had to stop listening to the audiobook because the music and the weird...
I heard the audiobook was
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. So,
was
yeah.
that Dead House? Was that what it was called?
I think so. That sounds right.
That was a good book, though.
It was very scary.
I also recently read Holly Horror, which is based on Holly Hobby. It's like the horror version.
I was
of
gonna
Holly
say
Hobby,
it kind of reminded
which
me
which is that that's like I think they're in 10th grade, so technically I think it's like YA. That was actually pretty creepy, and I didn't end up having any nightmares, but like I was reading and I just had to set my Kindle down for a second and just like, you know, go, yeah, this was not a great thing to read right before bed. My boyfriend's like, why are you reading this right before bed? I was like, because it's so good. I can't stop.
Don't look at me like
yeah.
that.
But that was also a really good story. So if you're into horror, there are some recommendations for you.
There you go.
Part two of our discussion this week is about Chalice of the Gods. We wanted to catch up on what the characters were doing because Chalice of the Gods takes place after Heroes of Olympus and before Trials of Apollo. And obviously we haven't discussed either one of those series on the podcast yet. And because our memories of Heroes of Olympus is pretty sketchy.
Basic?
Yeah. I thought it would be a good idea to, you know, do my favorite pastime, which is go through the fandom page for each of the trio.
Bless the internet.
Yeah, the main characters. To kind of see where we left them and what they'd been through in Heroes of Olympus, because I figured that could kind of inform what we could see in Chalice of the Gods, either their mental state or some characters that we've met previously. And I did find a couple of things that I kind of feel like are relevant. So
ooh.
I was pretty excited about that. So starting off with Percy Jackson, I'm going to try to get through these pretty quickly until we get to the stuff that I feel like we really need to discuss. But in The Lost Hero, Hera exchanges Percy Jackson and Jason Grace in order to unite the two camps against Gaia. Percy wakes up not knowing who he is and with only a dim memory of Annabeth. So, you know, Annabeth's been there the whole time.
I was going to say, it doesn't matter what God wants to do what, he will never forget Annabeth.
Yes. In Son of Neptune, he loses his curse of Achilles, which I thought was really important because we've wondered what would happen with that before. So, mm-hmm. like, he is not invincible anymore. And he basically spends the entirety of this book getting used to Roman life. In Mark of Athena, the two camps go to war, while the Heroes of Olympus group flee to Rome. And basically, at the end of the book, of course, we know Percy doesn't let Annabeth fall into Tartarus alone. Yeah, that's going to be so difficult when we get to those books. In House of Hades, they drink from the River of Phlegethon. The River Phlegethon in order to endure Tartarus. They meet up with Bob and Percy starts to disintegrate as he battles the Arai. So the Arai, A-R-A-I, are daughters of Nyx. They are female spirits of curses, particularly those placed by the dead upon those responsible for their death. So if you kill somebody and they curse you, the Arai are kind of responsible for enacting that. So he's cursed to disintegrate because Phineas, the son of Neptune, cursed him to die a painful death of dissolving. So, but he's saved from this disintegration, which means that technically it's never happened. And if you remember from the Chalice of the Gods chapter titles, there was a comment about disintegration and about him dying.
Yeah.
So I wonder if technically this curse never came to fruition, and so it has to in Chalice of the Gods.
This right here is why we're doing this.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's the things like that that, like, I just do not remember the disintegration thing. Mm-hmm. Like, for some reason. I remember him battling, like, even with the RI, but I don't necessarily remember that. But yeah, that's very...
It's interesting. It really makes me want to go back and read Heroes of Olympus, but, like, I just do not have time.
I mean, especially in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because, like, starting... If you were going to, it'd be like, oh, I want to read them before Chalice of the Gods, but, like, there's no way I could get through them in 2 weeks.
That's a lot of books.
It is.
Yeah. And basically after this, they escape Tartarus and head back to the Argo too. And then in Blood of Olympus, they fight against Gaia and win. Leo, quote-unquote, dies. Rhaena tells Percy and Annabeth that they are allowed to attend New Rome University, which, of course, sets up Chalice of the Gods. Nico says he's staying at Camp Half-Blood and admits his crush on Percy, basically being like, eh, you're not my type, and then goes and hangs out with Will.
There's this cutie Will.
Yeah. So, I don't think that they find out that Leo's not dead until Trials of Apollo. I think by the end of this book, they still believe he's dead. I feel like the reader knows he's alive, but I don't know if the rest of them know that he's alive. I don't remember entirely. So, it's possible that Chalice of the Gods, they could be reflecting on Leo's death.
That's a definite possibility, yeah. Because that... I want to say that that's 100% true. Like, I want to believe that Leo... It was in Trials of Apollo that we found out that Leo Valdez did not die. That could be a whole thing, like their grief and figuring out how to handle Leo not being around anymore.
Yeah. This occurred to me as well because Leo, so one of the seven had to die. That was in the prophecy. And technically Leo did die and then was brought back to life, still fulfilling the prophecy. However, as we know in Trials of Apollo, Jason actually dies, so I wonder if that was, like, the fulfillment of the prophecy still, like, if it still had to be fulfilled, and that's why Jason died. But also, during Chalice of the Gods, Jason's still alive.
Yeah.
So there's a possibility that we could see him, hear from him, something, and I think Jason fans would really appreciate a sneak peek of him.
I mean, yeah, I definitely think that is a possibility.
Yeah.
I don't think Rick's going to bank really heavily on it. Like, I don't think Jason's going to be a main part of the story or anything. Yeah. But I would not be surprised if we get a moment, a mini quest with Jason. Like, I would not be surprised if he's involved in something.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there are a lot of Jason fans, and this book is taking place before he died, so it's not like fan service or anything to put him in the story. Like, he is alive and very much a part of Percy's world at this point in the grand story.
And Jason is one of the few main characters who actually died, and I feel like, you know, Rick understands what that means to the fans, and obviously that means something to him as the author as well, so to be able to revisit that character, even if briefly, even if it's a single chapter where they're just exchanging quips or something like that, I think that would just be fun without, you're right, without being like fan service.
Yeah.
So, Annabeth Chase in The Lost Hero receives visions from Hera about Jason, basically refuses to go on a quest to save the goddess who's been captured, and then agrees to go to Camp Jupiter to find Percy. So this entire time, they don't know where Percy is, but she knows that Jason will help lead them to Percy. In The Son of Neptune, I don't think she has any point of view chapters here. She basically just, like, arrives at Camp Jupiter by the end of the book, essentially. And then in Mark of Athena, this is a huge Annabeth book, she's completed most of Olympus's redesign, which I thought was kind of important to mention.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a Persebeth reunion, which basically involves a kiss and a judo flip, because it's Annabeth, and
right.
She's both happy and furious at him
all
disappearing.
The time. Yeah.
Athena wants Annabeth to follow the mark of Athena and avenge her. Annabeth basically does this by rescuing the statue of Athena Parthenos and trapping Arachne in her own webbing. And basically, Arachne is the reason why Annabeth falls into Tartarus and why Percy decides to follow her.
The end of Mark of Athena is the most visually, like, static thing about this series in my head. I can remember the end of Mark of Athena.
Yeah.
Do I remember a lot of Son of Neptune? No. But Mark of Athena is stamped in there. Like, I remember the Arachne battle, and I remember that whole thing with the Athena Parthenos statue. Like, I remember all of that because it's just there.
I remember the fall into Tartarus, but I didn't remember the, like, step-by-step stuff with Arachne, and I was reading through how Annabeth actually defeats her, and I was so impressed by it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be really fun to revisit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, House of Hades will probably stay my favorite book, but I'm actually really excited to get to Mark of Athena because I don't remember a ton of it, and it's going to have a lot of Annabeth stuff, so I'm excited to revisit that one.
Definitely.
In House of Hades, Percy and Annabeth battle the Ari, like we were talking about. She ends up going blind because of her curse from Polyphemus, because she put on her cap and was no one,
mm-hmm.
and helped kill him, and he cursed her to go blind. And then she's also filled with despair and loneliness because Calypso cursed her because Percy left her to go back to Annabeth, basically. But she is healed by the end of the book and escapes Tartarus.
So basically, if Annabeth stopped saving Percy, she would stop being cursed.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned from this little description.
Yeah. That
save seems yourself, Percy. Annabeth's tired of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. In The Blood of Olympus, a cut on Annabeth's leg and Percy's bloody nose awaken Gaia, and the power of this statue helps restrain Gaia at first, so that's part of the reason why she needed to get the statue. And essentially, Gaia is defeated, and they plan on going to New Rome University. Now, Grover Underwood is not a huge part of Heroes of Olympus, which was... I thought I remembered this, but was still really disappointing reading it. And I remember when I was first reading Trials of Apollo being so excited that Grover had bigger parts in that series because I remember missing him a lot.
Yeah.
But in The Lost Hero, he's basically out looking for Percy. In The Son of Neptune, we find out that their empathy link has been suppressed, and Grover talks to him in a dream and tells him to stay put, and Percy doesn't really, like, know who Grover is and doesn't really want to listen to him because he wants to help the campers at Camp Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
In Mark of Athena, he's not present, but both Percy and Annabeth think about him and the useful things that he taught them. So his presence is kind of always around.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the House of Hades, he's seen in Jason's dream, and he's also protecting Rachel because of the war between camps, which I thought was really cute. Like, he's her protector.
Yeah.
And he can feel Gaia stirring, and so can a lot of the other, like, nymphs and satyrs, because they're, you know, earth beings, yeah. basically. In the Blood of Olympus, he leads the nymphs and satyrs into battle, and by the end, he says he can no longer sense Gaia. She's been sort of dispersed, and so she's gone.
Oh, Grover. Yeah, I am really excited to get a new story that Grover is going to be, like, an active member in, because, mm-hmm. yeah... with so many demigod heroes in Heroes of Olympus, there was just bound to be less of a role for Grover. You know, Percy doesn't need a minder anymore, and so Grover doesn't really have that role, but he's still, like, Percy's bestie, so, like, he's still involved, but just, yeah. With all of the demigods and the Argo and, like, all of that, it was just... bound to be difficult to keep Grover really involved in the story. So I am really, really, really glad that we're going to get an opportunity to see Grover in his element, doing his thing yeah. with his besties. And
eating leftovers, apparently.
I'm it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah. So there are a lot of characters that we know are definitely showing up in Chalice of the Gods, but we do know that Ganymede and Iris are going to play some sort of role. I was also going to do a little blurb on, like, Poseidon and stuff, but I didn't think that was as important because we know a lot about Poseidon, and yeah. I doubt he's going to be a large part of this, whereas I think Ganymede is going to be a big part, and Iris seems like she's going to be throughout the book as well.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with Ganymede, I just found out that he was a prince of Troy, and basically because he was so hot, Zeus kidnapped him while in the form of an eagle to serve him as cupbearer of the gods, which is hilarious. Now, he replaced Hebe, the goddess of youth and forgiveness, the daughter of Zeus and Hera. So Zeus got rid of his own daughter as cupbearer of the gods to replace him with this boy that he found was really hot. And my immediate thought was, okay, Hebe is the goddess of forgiveness, but, like, could she be mad? I mean, is this another Nick situation where we're going to call the bad guy ahead of time?
It could be. Like, yeah. I 100% would believe this.
I would have bet money on this if she wasn't the goddess of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's just... that wouldn't really make sense. Although I could see Rick kind of twisting that somehow to, like...
Yeah, because, like, as a daughter of Zeus and Hera, she has traits from, I would imagine, both Zeus and Hera. So I could 100% believe that she would be jilted by this and pissed and want to take her place back. And the only way to do that is to steal the cup and yeah. to be the cupbearer. Like, that 100% makes sense to me. So I could see this happening, especially knowing that she is the goddess of youth. It would make sense that maybe she doesn't necessarily see the nuance. I mean, there's no nuance. Zeus thought he was hot and wanted to drink. But, like, she couldn't see any reasoning why she was, you know, misplaced, you know, why she was displaced by Ganymede. So, like, she wants her place back. Like, in your youth, that's what you do. Like, when someone has replaced you or things have, you feel replaced, you try to get it back. And the best way to do that is to steal the cup and to do all the things. So I could definitely agree with you that this could be a new goddess for us. We've never had yeah. Hebe. Is it Hebe?
I think so. Yeah.
We've never had Hebe mentioned in any Rick Riordan stories. So, like,
that not that I can remember. Yeah. I think that would be pretty interesting.
Agreed.
The only time we've really... I think Ganymede might have been mentioned, like, offhand at one point in one of the other books, but it was something really not that important. But in Sea of Monsters, his voice can be heard advertising users for the Grey Sisters taxi service to buckle up. So, like, the little voice that comes over and tells them to strap in, that's Ganymede, which I just thought was really hilarious.
And then, obviously, we had some Sun and the Star stuff, too, but that's after
right.
Chalice of the Gods. Like, yeah. that's, yeah.
So, getting into Iris, this was actually a lot more interesting to me, and there was a lot of stuff that I thought could have been very relevant. So, Iris, as we know, is the goddess of the rainbow and messenger for the gods and demigods. She owns the Rainbow Organic Foods and Lifestyles brand. And throughout the series, she's used as a messaging service, pretty much. In The Last Olympian, she gets her own cabin at Camp Half-Blood. So, that was because of what Percy negotiated with Zeus and the other gods. So you can imagine that even though we're pretty sure that he's going to offend her, there's going to be some grace there because he is the reason why she gets her own cabin at Camp Half-Blood.
Mm-hmm.
She does have a son named Butch Walker, who is seen throughout Heroes of Olympus. He is a son of Iris, and so he seemed like a pretty badass character from what I was reading. I don't really remember him too much, but he doesn't play a large role, but he is in several of the books as kind of a background character.
I wonder if he could necessarily get involved in the story. Like, I wouldn't...
Possibly.
It wouldn't be completely a stretch. Like, that would be interesting.
Yeah, he could even maybe introduce the trio to Iris or something like that, be the reason why they get in touch with her.
Yeah.
Now, in The Son of Neptune, I just copied this from the fandom page because all of it was super interesting, so I'm just going to read this straight through. Iris is first shown when a huge rainbow appears before the army of monsters led by the giant Polybotes, approaching San Francisco. They attack the light, but it burns their bodies and melts the weapons into rainbow colors. She then throws a gluten-free, no-sugar-added, vitamin-enriched, soy-free, goat milk and seaweed-based cupcake simulation, which the monsters first assume is a grenade, and which both parties assume is a ding-dong, at the Horde when they demand food. She says that she has eased up on her duties as messenger of the gods and has opened a chain of stores called Rainbow Organic Foods and Lifestyles, ROFL. The stores are described as having bins of nuts and dried fruit, baskets of apples, and clothing racks with tie-dyed shirts and gauzy Tinkerbell-type dresses. The entire store is adorned with wind chimes, crystals, geodes, dream catchers, macrame, and other strange stuff. Iris tells her employee, Fleecy, who is a cloud nymph, who she now has handling Iris messaging, to give the ailing Percy Jackson green tea with organic honey and wheat germ for his memory sickness. Now, this was a lot of stuff, but from our Reed Riordan article we read a couple of weeks ago, we kind of already knew she was that, like, hippie mom, kind of like crystals and geodes and all that kind of stuff. So all of that still falls into place. We see that she's pretty powerful. She can attack with rainbows. That's kind of interesting. And I just loved the whole thing about
the grenade,
the cupcake. Oh, cupcakes. That was mentioned.
They were.
They get a cupcake and a surprise. I wonder if this is the cupcake that Percy will have to eat. This also reminded me that there's that part where Annabeth has the tea. She, like, saves the day with the tea or something. So I wonder, could there be, like, another memory sickness, or is this a tea for something else?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hmm.
But I feel like this is a lot of really good information.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Because we think we know Iris because she's been involved in the series the whole time, but we don't really know her as a goddess. We've not really spent a ton of time with her specifically. So, yeah, I think this is all really important and helpful information, something to keep in mind as we start this story, and just keep in mind who Iris is and what she's done so far.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Fleecy might show up, and there's, you know, her son and everything, so this kind of gives us an idea of what other minor characters could end up showing up in the book. I also wanted to mention that she's the one who gives Frank advice to basically live without the gods if he can, and to give his piece of wood to someone he cares for so that it will last longer. And even though that's not super relevant to Chalice of the Gods, I just thought it was interesting that she kind of gives him this prophecy. So she is somebody who's very important, and we might be seeing Frank in Chalice of the Gods. We might be seeing a whole bunch of the Camp Jupiter kids.
I love Frank.
In this book.
Yeah. I love Frank so much, so I would be very, very happy to see Frank.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But that is all I have for Chalice of the Gods. I feel like that was a good amount of stuff. I feel a little bit better knowing some of the facts about, you know, like, Percy no longer has the Curse of Achilles on him. I feel like that's important. Kind of remembering what Annabeth and Percy have been through, that Grover wasn't in it a ton, and that hopefully we'll be getting a lot more from him in this. And then definitely the Iris stuff, I feel like, going back to those chapter titles could really give us some hints.
Agreed, yeah. It's just a little refresher to keep at the forefront of your mind, like, yeah, they've been through a lot, here's all the things, like, but not... you know, not too much. And, you know, if you guys are doing rereads and there's something you come across that's really, that seems really, really important, make sure to let us know, because we're definitely cool with a little talk about Heroes of Olympus as we get into Chaos of the Gods. Even though we haven't read it. We'll do that sometime.
Yeah.
Oh, there's too many books and not enough time.
I know.
I just want to read them all right now.
So do I.
That's pretty much my life boiled down into a problem. Like,
yeah.
There's just not enough time to read all the things I want to read.
Yes. Agreed.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune into Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show Wolfpack is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is just a really big help. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have a little bit of feedback this week. We reached out regarding our 100th episode and wanted to know if you guys had any favorites or how you came to know Percy, how you found the podcast, like all of that sort of thing. And we got a couple of responses, so I'm going to throw it to Karen for those.
Yeah, so Ian once again writes in and says, I discovered Percy Jackson after seeing a poster for the first film. I liked the sound of the film, so I decided to read the books first. So glad I did. I found the podcast a few episodes in, looking for someone discussing Percy Jackson, and haven't missed one sense. Thanks for a great pod. I also want to start on Rick Riordan Presents books. I haven't read any yet. Once I'm done with Cassie Quinn, I will take the plunge.
Aww.
Thanks for reading my books. That makes me so happy.
Just trying to get that MVL, Most Valuable Listener
yeah,
award.
MVL.
Ian's going for it.
I love that. Yeah, I hope you're enjoying them. And definitely, I'm so excited to hear which Rick Riordan Presents book you start on first. If you need any suggestions, let us know.
Yeah.
We have plenty of them.
Oh, yeah.
We also got an email from Quiva who says, Dear Kristen and Karen, episode number 96. Did you know the biggest obelisk in Europe is the Wellington Monument in Phoenix Park, Dublin? It's dedicated to Arthur Wellesley, who made the Wellington boots. I did not know that. That is very interesting.
That is very cool.
Yeah. I've been to Dublin. I wonder if I've seen that and just, like, didn't realize.
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe I'll have to go back through my pictures.
That's cool.
For Ireland, yeah. And then she also says, episode number 99, so happy that when I searched for Percy Jackson podcast, I found yours. Can't believe it has been 100 episodes. Keep it up. Kind regards, Quiva.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, I love when you guys write into us. It makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm. And that wraps up our 100. I just did that backwards. It was right for you, though, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Apparently I translate. I don't know. We just wrapped up our 100th episode. 100. Done.
Yes. Whew. In the bag.
On to the next 100. Yeah, pretty much. With so much to look forward to. I mean, we talked earlier in the episode about all the things that are coming up for us, but yeah, with, you know, getting through the rest of the Kane Chronicles books and the adaptations of those and the adaptation for the show, and we've got Heroes of Olympus on the horizon. It's way far in the distance at the moment, but, like, eventually we want to go through those chapter by chapter and really dig in deep into those, which I'm really looking forward to because it's been so long since
yeah.
I visited those, so yeah, so much good to happen, hopefully, in the next 100, so.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to be talking about Serwa Boateng and the Guide to Witchcraft and Mayhem, which is the second book.
So, yes.
Yes. It doesn't say two, but it's two. In my brain, I don't know. It's just words. And it's, yeah. I apparently need to eat lunch because, But yeah, I'm really excited to talk about book two for Roseanne and get into all things Sirwa.
Yeah.
But until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.